Hey everyone, welcome to the latest edition of the Padre Cast. I am joined once again by Fred. How are you doing, Fred?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. It's been a busy week. Maybe not so much in the sports gaming, with the exception of NCAA football, but entertainment, been a lot of entertainment stuff, and we're getting closer to the NFL draft. Very exciting for me. I know less so for you because your Bears don't really have any action going on for the first maybe 2 days, but everything's starting to come together here, and NFL, it's good to get back into that. I've already had to pay for my season tickets, which is annoying. I don't see the results of that for like 6 months. It's tough to lay out all that money in like March and April and not see the results of it for a few months. But anyways, I'm excited for the NFL draft and everything. But let's go with the rundown on the sports gaming news first. Big week for NCAA Football 11. A ton of news out on the game. Generally, this is when we start hearing about NCAA football in the lead up to the NFL draft. But we had the cover athlete announcement, which actually, instead of a different athlete for each cover, we have just one, and comes as no surprise probably to anyone that Tim Tebow is the guy. Marketing wise, he's the perfect choice. No matter, it doesn't matter if you like him or not. He's the guy who's going to be getting the press, even though he may not go high in the draft. He may not go the second round or whatnot. But he is. There's nobody that matches the marketing power that Tebow has. And I've seen a few people who've sent me messages on Twitter and such saying, you know, what does it really matter? They don't have NCAA football doesn't have competition. Does a cover guy actually sell a game? And I, you know, in most cases, no. I don't think the cover guy results in anybody buying a game that they wouldn't have otherwise. In this case, I think that it actually does have an effect, because it's not just you walk into the store and you see Tebow, so you have to buy the game. But it's, you know, how are they going to promote the game? And Tebow's going to be in the spotlight all summer long. Doesn't matter if he gets picked in the second round. There's going to be the media is going to be covering him as, you know, for with whatever team he's with, and you know, based on what's his role going to be and everything, he's going to be in the news no matter what, which is perfect for the game. Every time they mention Tim Tebow, someone might mention, you know, he's also the cover athlete for NCAA football. He also signed a, you know, an endorsement contract with Nike or all those type of things. So it's big news on that front. Also that he's covering every single version. Up until now, we had been given indications that it was going to be more than him, but no, you know, they went back to the single cover athlete, and it makes a lot of sense here. What's your thoughts on Tebow on the cover, Fred?
Like some people have mentioned, I don't really think it's that big a deal. It's just a cover athlete. But like you said, the guy's so popular, regardless if you like him or not. You know, the
Yeah,
people,
or you hate him, and
yeah,
people talk. People talk about him, no
right.
matter
It's
what.
you know, any publicity's good publicity, and I mean, look at it. He's not. I think people just hate him just because the media hypes him up a lot. I mean, what has he really done to make you hate the guy? And he's had arguably one of the greatest college careers of any player, you know. So I think he epitomizes what an NCAA student athlete should be, and I think that's why he's a good choice on the cover. But like you said, it's just he's probably the biggest name in college football. Regardless if you like him or hate him, he's just popular, you know, and why not put him on the cover?
Yeah, and so this announcement comes out, and you see, you know, the press release goes out, the pictures EA puts out of him from the cover shoot go out, and it's not just the gaming websites covering this. It's, you know, it's ESPN, it's all the mainstream publications. I mean, New York Times. It doesn't matter. They're going to have news about this. And if it had been, you know, Eric Berry or something, it's not as big a deal. This is a huge deal. So, you know, Tebow, yeah, you love him, you hate him. It doesn't really matter. People are talking about him. That's what's important to EA. And look, yeah, he does epitomize the college football player. Had a huge stature, had a lot of success. And again, this is a guy we've talked about in previous Padre casts is, you know, cover guys aren't going to be dangerous guys anymore. Tebow is not going to get arrested for dogfighting. You know, he's not going to bring bad publicity to the game, which is probably just as important as bringing good publicity to the game. So being able to avoid that, I mean, he sort of fits as the perfect guy for them. Actual game news now. We had a few things out of the Tebow video. Very clearly, you can see that the game now has ESPN branding, at least on the score bar. And given that, I'm sure it has a bigger place within other aspects of the game, also menus and cutscenes and stuff like that. It's not just going to be the score bar, but you know, this is something that you spotted in the video after a couple seconds. I mean, it's in the background basically of them playing the game, but it comes out for a reason. You know, EA looks over these videos, they determine what goes in them. They're not putting out a video and then going to be surprised that, you know, oh, there was ESPN in the background. This is something they wanted us to find. This is something they wanted us to see and to talk about. ESPN presentation was one of the big, you know, the community really wants it more than probably anything else. There was a survey that came out back in November, kind of leaked out, had a list of different things asking about which features you want most for the game this year. And based on the news we have already, three directly off that list appear to be in ESPN presentation. We had locomotion animations and momentum and those type of things. New locomotion engine is in, and then also authentic offenses for every team in the game. Those are three things taken directly off that survey, so there's a good chance other stuff on that survey is going to be in also. How much did you actually play NCAA Football 10? Because for me, NCAA Football 9 played it a ton, Online Dynasty. NCAA 10 came around, and it was, you know, I couldn't get into it. I don't know if it was just Madden overshadowing it or just not enough changes made. The gameplay was pretty similar. Online Dynasty was pretty similar. Did you spend much time with the game last year?
Yeah, you know, I think I did the same thing you did. 09, we played it a lot. I found myself just not even the Online Dynasty, but just playing regular Dynasty offline was something that I did a ton. And then last year, didn't play it so much, and I think it was a combination of it just being very similar to 09, and nothing really big that stood out. And Madden overall just felt like a better game to me than Madden 09 did, and so I found myself playing that one a lot more. It was weird because 09 for me was the odd year. I ended up playing, I think, NCAA football almost more than I did Madden. And then last year, kind of went back to the way it's always been for me. Just play NCAA football till Madden came out, and then after that, it just took a back seat.
Yeah, exactly. That's you know, and I even got into the team builder thing at first with NCAA football, but as I look back on that, you know, I love the feature, but it's not really an NCAA football, you know, it's not really a part of the game. You don't go into, you know, a team builder. Basically, what I'm trying to say is team builder could be used for any game. It just so happens that it's used for NCAA football. But no, you know, I spent a lot of time building teams. Use it. I didn't end up using them very much. We had problems starting an online dynasty with the created teams, and eventually just scrapped that idea. But you know, yeah, I'm starting to look forward to NCAA football 11. I mean, once I play it at E3, I'm sure my excitement will either go up or stay flat. Last year it was pretty flat. I didn't get too excited about what was at E3 because it was pretty similar to all the changes were very subtle and didn't really change impact the game the way I would have liked it to. And then they spent a lot of time on features like Season Showdown, which was pretty much completely pointless. And you know, it's tough to come away from that experience feeling real excited about it. So we'll see. And I think, you know, based on the early information we have, not only for NCAA football, but also Madden getting locomotion, it seems like they understand what they have to deliver this year, and they're talking about the right things. So we still have months to go. E3 coming up. We'll find out a lot more in time. But it's a lot of good information early on. We rarely get stuff this early, especially this significant, so it's important to put it in perspective. A couple other things from this week. We had the release of the 2010 FIFA World Cup demo, which I spent a little time with, posted a few quick impressions and a video of. Game seems really fun, seems a little more accessible than maybe the general FIFA title, seems a little more fast-paced, a little more hectic, almost in a way. I enjoyed it. I tend to like the World Cup games more than the FIFA games. I'm not sure, but it might just be intrinsically that I get more interested in World Cup than anything else. Although now with Major League Soccer and the Seattle franchise, I've really started to get into watching that. But yeah, the World Cup demo game's out on April 27th, so the demo's out now. We also got news on UFC 2010 demo. Should be out. They want it out a month before release of the game. I was looking at the schedule and rather than exactly a month before in that week here in April. I think more likely we'll see it the last week of April, just because otherwise it'd be going up against the NFL draft, which doesn't necessarily mean you can't have the demo out, but any sports fan, their attention's going to be on the NFL draft and everything going around with that. But it's going to have four fighters, Shogun, Machida, Rashad Evans, and Rampage, all light heavyweights with two different modes, exhibition, just general head-to-head, and a limited sort of tournament mode, which they said they'll talk about more coming up. The demo for UFC 2009, before the game was released, I mean, that's pretty much what woke up this franchise and gave it a big boost before it released and ended up being the second best-selling sports game in the United States, behind only Madden last year. And it's tough to launch a franchise, and that demo really sold it to a lot of people. So I know maybe it doesn't have the importance it did last year, but I'm encouraged to see that they're putting that out again about a month early. Something we saw with MLB The Show was that they've had really successful demos, and then this year they didn't put one out, and it starts to get people questioning why there isn't a demo. Well, it came out after release, but why wasn't there a demo early? I mean, it may have been because of this Best Buy deal they made for an exclusive chance to play the game early, but THQ could have sat back and said, man, you know, we had such a successful year last year, we don't need to put the demo out as early, something like that. But they didn't, so I think that's encouraging.
It could be one of those things, too, because, I mean, UFC's pretty good with their marketing, and it just so happens that they're putting four fighters in there who are going to be facing each other in May.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that Evans and Jackson is at the end of the month, and I know that Machida and Shogun are rematching. I thought that was at the beginning of the month or something. So.
Yeah, well, that would be perfect timing then, and you're right, because something you see here with THQ and UFC is they really work to promote each other, and you're seeing that also with EA and EA MMA and Strikeforce, where they're kind of going back and forth, and EA has a Strikeforce event to work into promotion-wise during E3, which we'll probably see a lot of the game at E3. This UFC demo should be out later this month. I know a lot of people are looking forward to that. We'll see if it holds us over till the release at the end of May, and we'll be doing some sort of league like we did last year, whether we use the Fight Camp League setup that UFC has or not. We'll see when it comes to that. But finally, also, I did a piece on the MLB Today feature in MLB 2K10. This is kind of a dynamic, takes real-life stats, real-life events, dynamically enters them into the game for commentary and an on-screen presentation. And, I realize MLB 2K10 overshadowed by MLB The Show, obviously. Sales dwarf MLB 2K10. 2K10 is not a perfect game by any means. I did find it to be a lot more fun, obviously, than last year's game. It's not perfect by any means, but there is a fun factor to it. And this MLB Today feature is really neat. It's basically for Play Now games, just one-off games, which is the main concern I have with it. But in the trial run I gave through the other night, I was really impressed with what it did, delivering commentary about the games the previous night before, the real-life games the previous night before, and the stats for the current season and the situation in the current series between the teams. So I have a whole write-up of some of the comments that were made in the games, and they were for the most part accurate, with the exception of one game I played late in the evening, which may have mixed up that night's results with what should have been in there. But overall, pretty neat feature. If you have MLB 2K10, you should at least check it out. The commentary really keeps things fresh, and it's kind of fun to play through in that regard. And it supposedly is going to get better as the year goes on and takes into account more of the stuff going on in real life. So that's worth checking out. Let's switch over to entertainment now. This was a busy week for on this side. And just yesterday, we got news that it's still a rumor, but it seems to have a lot behind it, is that the new Spider-Man reboot, they're working on casting for it. And Logan Lerman, who was in Percy Jackson most recently, he was also in, thought he did a pretty good job in 310 to Yuma. He is supposedly the front runner to play Peter Parker. And there are a couple other names that have been tossed about, but really it seems like they focused on him. This is they're taking the story back to high school, so obviously it has to be a younger set of actors. And they wanted to go with kind of an unknown, and I'd say he still fits the unknown. He's not a big name guy. He's somebody who could possibly grow with this franchise. What do you think of the news on this on Spider-Man?
It really does nothing for me. I've never really enjoyed the Spider-Man movies all that much. Never really been a big Spider-Man fan. And I don't know, especially since they're going back towards the direction of the comics. What is that? The Ultimate Spider-Man series or whatever it is.
Yeah, right. Amazing.
And, yeah. I don't know. I just don't want to see teen angst in, you know, Peter Parker. I'm like already old enough to where I'm more of like enjoying the darker Batman type.
Hey. You know, you can be thankful though they didn't settle on someone like Zac Efron or Robert Pattinson, right?
I know.
When the news first broke that they were going back to high school, everybody said, "Oh, great! They're gonna do, you know, it's gonna be Robert Pattinson." And at least they haven't gone that direction. Yeah, I'm not a big Spider-Man fan either. Much more into kind of the darker comic book movies. Following where this is gonna go, I like Mark Webb. Solely for 500 Days of Summer, which is one of my favorite movies I've seen in a long time. Actually, one of my favorite kind of romantic comedies. If you haven't seen that, it's worth checking out. So we'll see what he does with this. It's going to be, you had a story on it. It's going to be a 3D movie and all that, and everything we can expect with that. So another interesting development in terms of movie rentals. You know, I've been covering this over the last few months, but I'm an avid Netflix user, also go to Redbox occasionally, and so studios thinking that, you know, we have to increase our sales of DVDs. Here's how we'll do it. We'll put in a delay period of 4 weeks where the movies are out, you can only buy them. Now there's also a deal with Blockbuster where you can rent them from Blockbuster, but through Netflix, through Redbox, you have to wait 4 weeks from when they come out before they're available on the service. This has, you know, it's a little frustrating for me. But at the same time, I just kind of look at you know, okay, Netflix is going to offer this on, you know, in 4 weeks from this date, this is when it's really releasing. So I think a lot of people are going to be woken up to the reality of this because one of the companies is Fox now. So anyone with Netflix, anyone going to Redbox, not going to be able to get Avatar when it comes out on April 22nd. A lot of people are going to buy the movie anyway. But I think this is going to be the first time where people really notice that, hey, you know, this is a reality now. We're not going to be able to rent these movies for 4 weeks. I don't think, personally, that it makes you buy any movies you wouldn't have otherwise. I've looked at them over the last couple months. You know, either I was going to buy it, either it's a Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I would buy anyway, or it's a movie that I just want to see. I'm not going to spend $25 on a DVD just to see it a few weeks earlier. Have you been impacted at all by this?
No, not really. I used to buy every single DVD that, you know, even if I had never seen it, I'm going to buy it. That's what I did. I used to kind of collect the DVDs. But then I kind of just went on a real tight budget, and like you now, I just buy the ones that I feel I need to buy, you know. And so, no, this doesn't really impact me. I wouldn't go wasting money on a movie that I still really haven't seen if I can just wait 4 more weeks and get it on Netflix. I don't really think this is going to impact me too much. I kind of curious to see, though, let's say that they do this. You know, we're going to delay it on Netflix and Redbox and whatever else. Mm-hmm. If they don't see an increase in sales, are they going to just admit that, okay, this didn't really help, and then go back to just, you know, being normal?
Because I doubt it.
Like you, I really don't see people just going and buying movies to begin with just because of the 4 week delay. I think they'll just continue to wait.
Yeah. It's a little frustrating. But in the end, you know, yeah, I'm not going to buy a new movie just to see it earlier. If I wanted to see it that early, I'd go see it in the theater. And, you know, yeah, I'm very picky now these days with the Blu-rays. It's usually a movie I've seen or a movie I expect to like and for whatever reason didn't see it. And we've talked about Avatar before. I doubt I'm going to buy Avatar right off the bat. And I think you had said you probably won't either.
No.
So It's just interesting that, yeah, they're not going to change their philosophy on this because they made headway. And what I just don't understand about it is the good movies, they still sell DVDs. They still sell Blu-rays. You see the big movies that come out that people like, people buy them. The difference is these days, people are, yeah, they're more picky with their money, so not spending movies on or sp not spending money on the shitty movies that, you know, that maybe they would have bought in the past. It's not the good movies that are getting hit on these. We still see, you know, like I mentioned before, The Hangover broke records for a comedy in DVD sales. Yeah, because it was funny and because people liked the movie.
Yeah, you know, and I do that article every week, just posting the sales from Rentrak. That actually, and I mean, last week that Alvin and the Chipmunks Squeakquel was the highest selling movie, and I'm thinking, okay, it's obvious people are still spending their money on crap when this movie is like number one. But I mean, you look at the top 10 in renting and the top 10 in sales. The good movies are always going to be on there, and they're always going to be on there for multiple weeks. And I think that's like you're saying, if a movie's good, people will buy it, regardless if it comes out now or it comes out 4 weeks later. They're going to buy it, you know?
Yeah, and like Alvin and the Chipmunks, terrible movie. I was forced to watch that, but it did make like $250 million at the box office, or damn near $300 million, if I remember right. So you know, it's something that is bought for the kids, but you still see, you know, if a family film is, you know, not liked by the kids either, and doesn't have the appeal to anybody, it's not going to sell regardless of if, you know, if you're forcing a period where you can only buy it. You know, we're going to be moving towards more digital distribution type of services. Netflix, you know, part of this deal is that they get more into on the Watch Now feature, where you can just stream it. More TV shows. You know, Fox is going to be bringing on their shows, so you're going to get, you know, 24 and Bones and Fringe and all those movie or all those TV shows. You're going to get more movies from the distributors' libraries. So it's sort of a trade-off. I don't use the streaming service very often anymore, but be interesting to see that beefed up. But yeah, you know, it's kind of irked just by these studios, and so I'm going to support. You know, when I buy these movies, also I kind of feel like I'm supporting them. So I only buy the movies that I really liked and that I feel really deserved it. So we had quite a bit of new trailers this week. A few movies that I hadn't really seen much on until recently. New trailers this week included Dinner for Schmucks, which was Steve Carell and Paul Rudd comedy. We had The Other Guys, which is Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, amongst some other names. Resident Evil Afterlife, the big thing with that is that it was actually filmed using the same technology as Avatar, for the 3D at least. At Splice, which is a pretty interesting looking sci-fi film, and then the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot, which opens at the end of this month. Out of those, what stood out to you the most as what you're anticipating at least?
Probably anticipating. I would probably have to say that the Nightmare on Elm Street one, you know. I wasn't too excited after seeing the what is that, the Dinner with the Schmucks, or what was it called?
Yeah, Dinner for Schmucks.
Yeah, Dinner for Schmucks, and the Will Ferrell Mark Wahlberg movie, it looked okay, but I don't know, it almost seemed like I'd get irritated watching Will Ferrell with how stupid he is in the movie. And then but you know, Resident Evil, I've always been a fan of that movie, I think because I enjoyed the games so much. And I think it's visually, it's going to be a very good movie. I don't know how well the story will be, but I'll probably still see it, especially if they're using similar technology to what Avatar used. You know, I think that's going to be good, and that's something that I probably would consider to go see in the movies, just because of seeing it in 3D and all that. But I think Nightmare on Elm Street is probably the one that caught my eye. That looks pretty decent and something I'd probably watch.
Yeah, I've kind of reserved my thoughts on that movie until recently, just because I didn't know how it was going to turn out. Looks pretty good. I think I'm actually going to get to see an early screening of that near the end of the month, a couple days before it comes out. But yeah, out of the list, I personally would go for The Other Guys. And I don't know if it was just me. I thought the trailer was – you said you didn't think it was that great, but I thought it was – it had me laughing at a couple points, and like just Samuel L. Jackson and The Rock – I think they're going to play off those guys pretty well. Splice looked pretty interesting also. That sci-fi movie, kind of different feel to it, I think. It's probably, you know, not some huge big budget affair. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not going to be in 3D.
Yeah, I really didn't hear anything about that movie until recently, and then it kind of slipped under the radar because, you know, Brody has been doing, what is that, the Predator movie, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, kind of just fell under the radar with this one. But no, it looks decent. It's a little, I mean, you kind of can tell what's going to happen just based off of the trailer, but it didn't look too bad.
Yeah, it looks self-contained enough. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be in the lab the whole movie, but I kind of like that feel when it's contained in a small area instead of, okay, it gets out and, you know, and wreaks havoc on the city or something like we see so many times. And just going forward, coming up this week actually opens – it opens on Friday, but actually it has Thursday night, 10 p.m. shows. I wanted to get a plug in for Kick-Ass, and I don't think I've talked about it much on here. I've had my review out for, I don't know, damn near a month now. This movie is amazing. It is absolutely one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow.
I went into it, and like I'd heard good things about this movie. It started off, you know, I was a little iffy on it maybe for the first 20 minutes, and then after that, it just kicked into gear, and like there's a surprising amount of emotion, and like I had heard beforehand that a lot of people were saying, people had seen early screenings of this movie, that it could very well be the best comic book movie ever. I mean, topping The Dark Knight, and I you know, that's kind of hard to imagine because it's a different flavor this movie is. But it actually does have dark undertones. It does get serious at points. It does have a real emotional connection. But the action is off the charts. It's gruesome. It's extremely violent. The language is just get ready for a whole lot of it. But like, and Chloe Moretz, I believe is her name, Moretz, as Hit Girl. Incredible. This is going to be like, she's going to be a phenomenon after this movie. I've been watching the reviews come into Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like at 80% now. But if you look at the negative reviews on it, it's all people who are talking about like morals and how. I'm dead serious. If you go read them, it's about like there's a little girl who kills a whole bunch of people. You know, little girl who's, you know, call someone a cunt. Little girl who, you know, and it's all about like morals and this feeling that it's like over the top, but it's actually very true to the comic, and it's fantastic movie. I guarantee you have to see it, and I guarantee you will like it.
You gave it five
out of
five
absolutely.
Stars, right?
And absolutely.
I think that would it have been 6 out of 5 stars if Ken Jeong was in it?
No, he's too busy.
Oh, okay.
He's got too many big roles lined up. No, but what's unique about this movie, in a lot of comic book movies, you do have these comic relief type characters. You didn't have that in The Dark Knight. You don't have it in Kick-Ass. There is comedy in this movie, but it's real natural. It comes through the characters naturally. And you know, like the first, like I said, the first 20 minutes or so, I was a little iffy on because it was very light, had some of that comedic nature to it, but then it really dug in and grounded itself. And I would absolutely, you know, Nicolas Cage is awesome in it. It's really a take no prisoners type movie. Pretty much anybody could die at any time. There's no sense that this character's safe. Kick-Ass, obviously. But there's still tension even in some of these scenes. There's one action scene, and I almost felt like the ending, like there was this action sequence that was just completely amazing, one of the best I've ever seen. But that wasn't the end of the movie. There was another kind of maybe half hour after that. So I almost felt, it was almost like a letdown after that certain point because the ending couldn't live up to that necessarily. But it sets up, you know, there's going to be a sequel assuming this does well. It's rated R. Obviously, for a lot of the things I described, and which might inhibit its box office take early on, but it's got a very one movie it's compared to a lot is The Matrix, R-rated. It's gonna hit and it's going to get this word of mouth going. There's already a ton for it. So I just want to get a plug in for this movie. You see it. If you see it, please tweet me. Please send me a message on Facebook or something telling me what you thought. And I have a feeling that you're going to like it. So, yeah, that's my plug for Kick-Ass. And I continue to promote it because I think there's a lot of people. It's hard to advertise this movie on TV because you can't get across the violence, the gruesome nature, the language. You can't get that across. They're trying to get across some of the comedy, which is about all they can do. But awesome movie. Everybody applauded after the end. I'm serious though. Like usually that's corny.
Yeah.
But honestly, it happened. I've read things about screenings where there have been standing ovations at the end.
Wow.
So I'm telling you, see it, you won't be disappointed. At the very least, it's entertaining. But to me, it had a whole lot more to it than just that. So that's my plug on that. And before we go, I wanted to throw out, you know, we've been talking a little bit like of an off topic at the end on a subject that's of interest to us at the given time. This week, I want to talk a little bit about the NFL draft, about the structure for this year, and also since we were talking about Tebow earlier, talk about his prospects. I see Tebow going. There's some talk that he might go late in the first round now. I don't see that happening. I see him as an early second to mid second round guy. And I think, you know, I have this gut feeling, and there's been nothing out there to suggest that this could happen. I have this gut feeling that somehow the Bengals are going to end up with him. Perfect fit as far as I'm concerned. He could sit for a couple years. Carson Palmer, Palmer hasn't been the same since his knee injury. They could sit him behind Palmer for a couple of years and then bring him in. I don't know if there's anything to that. I just have this gut feeling on that. Some teams that have looked at Tebow, brought him in for personal workouts, have been the Redskins, the Bills, the Patriots. Patriots are another interesting option because they have three second-round picks to go along with their 22nd pick, I believe, in the first round. So they have the ability at least to take a guy that's more of a developmental guy. There's a lot of talk, though, now that somebody's going to trade up and grab him maybe in the late first. I just don't see that happening. I do think, you know, I think he's probably wowing people with his interviews. He's very charismatic, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but, you know, he seems like a great guy. He seems like a great leader. Everything we've read about him, he's a great leader. Where he goes, it's gonna be tough. There's gonna be a lot of conjecture out there from different people suggesting he's gonna go a certain place, like the first round, just to get somebody to trade up to do it. But you know, it's gonna be fascinating. It's gonna be a story that, like it or not, you know, we were talking about it with the cover. Like it or not, Tebow's gonna be talked about on draft night all night, even, you know, early in the first round when we know he's not gonna go. He's gonna be talked about all the time. So get used to it. What do you think? Would you want, if the Bears had a second round pick and could draft? I mean, it's kind of a different situation for Chicago because you got Cutler and he's still young and everything. But is that somebody you'd want on your team?
I don't see why you wouldn't want him on your team. The guy's proven he's a winner, and I think he just seems like he's one of those guys that if you tell him he can't play in the NFL, he's going to do everything in his power to prove you wrong. And there aren't many guys who will do that. You know, there's guys who are just gifted naturally, and if some of these guys had the heart or even the drive that he does, they would probably be some of the greatest players, you know, in history.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't understand why you wouldn't want him on your team. I can see if your concern is where he's drafted, if you think that your team reached and kind of, you know, drafted him out of where he should have gone. But as far as not wanting him on the team, I don't know why you really wouldn't want him on your team.
Yeah, I like the guys who take that challenge. You know, there's going to be a ton of doubters for Tebow, and he's going to get the opportunity to prove him wrong. You don't have to rush him in, but that's also kind of the problem with Tebow is that you're drafting him for the future and based on potential and based on leadership, and that's not going to be you're not going to be able to bring that in right away. I mean, if the Bills draft Tim Tebow, he's probably not going to be starting this year. So how do you sell that to the fans? You know, oh, well, you know, maybe Tebow will be ready in 3 years. How do you sell that to the fans who want to win now? That's why a team like the Patriots who have multiple picks can get away with something like that. So we'll see what happens there. But, Yeah, so that's going to be a fascinating story to follow. It'll be in our face the whole time. There's no getting around it. Now, the draft changed up the format this year. First round takes place Thursday night, second and third round Friday night, and then the fourth through the seventh on Saturday. I know a lot of people have talked about this new format. The NFL loves it. It's going to get ratings off the charts. Prime time ratings. They're going to make a ton of money off of this. Now, as someone on the West Coast, this is where my concern comes in, because on the West Coast, the first round of the draft starts, I believe, at 4 p.m. So there's people. This is a Thursday. Most people are going to be in work. They might not be able to get out. Whatever. It's frustrating in that regard. I won't miss any of it personally, but I know a lot of people who will. Might have to rush home or just going to be stuck listening to it on the radio or something. East Coast, great. Works out great for the East Coast guys or the Central guys, right?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I personally hate the new format, and I think it's mainly because, ever since I can remember, my buddy and I, we used to get together every Saturday for the draft. You know, you get some food, you get some drinks, and you kind of just sit there and just watch the draft all day. And then same thing goes for Sunday. And to now split it up, and it's like during the week, and I got to work the next day. I'm really not
work.
Looking
so
forward
there,
to
yeah,
that.
There, the East Coast guys, they may get to see the start, but then they're going to be up till 11 p.m. or midnight or something on that first night. So, and then they got to go to work the next morning. So it has those problems. But then again, it also has some bonuses in that, like this. Friday, the second round, there's going to be a ton of action because teams are going to go, going to go rest up after the first night. Second round's going to see a ton of trades, probably more than usual because teams will have all night to evaluate guys who are still on the board, possibilities of trades, things like that. But yeah, it bothers me because then how many people are going to go sit down? I will, but how many people are going to go on Saturday and say, okay, I'm going to spend the next 8 hours watching the fourth round through the seventh round? I mean, yeah, maybe we did that already on Sunday, but still, I mean, most of the action, most of the excitement is going to be those first 2 nights. So yeah, it does lose a little bit in that regard as sort of an event. Still, I mean, the first round's probably going to take 4 or 5 hours, so you could still have a reasonable draft party. But yeah, if you don't even have a pick in the first round, you're kind of left out in the cold. So it's going to be interesting. I think this is just like how the NFL experimented with the Pro Bowl in the Super Bowl site, and then you saw with it happening the week before the Super Bowl instead of the week after. You saw the they broke ratings records and stuff. They're going to get the ratings to justify this, but at the same time, it kind of puts people in a tough position, the purists, the people who really want to get into this, in exchange for the more casual people who are now going to be turning in to watch. They're making it more of, everybody can watch, not just the people who know these guys and who are big fans of the NFL, but it's a prime time event now. So I think next week on the PadreCast, if you're still around, Fred, if you're not occupied with various life issues that are expected to come up shortly, we'll probably talk about the NFL draft more, or I may just do an NFL special edition of the PadreCast, NFL draft edition, maybe where I'll go over my mock draft and stuff like that. Very interesting. I'll probably have a few more mock drafts out before then, keeping up on some of the developments and some of the different possibilities. And as a Seahawks fan, I'm, very intrigued by what's going to happen coming up. So that's going to do it for the show today. Thanks again, Fred, for taking time out to join me. And yeah, thanks. And until next time, until next week, everybody take care.